The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The In-Between is intended for mature audiences and may include topics that can be unsettling, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, rape, murder, and animal abuse. Testimony shared by guests of the show is their own and does not reflect the views of Mel Barrett, Ruby Grace Productions, or Grab Bag Collab. Listener discretion is advised.
Can we admit that we're all transfixed by that sick little soap opera trial in Exeter, New Hampshire?
What time did you get here today?
1:30 this morning.
1:30? Why?
Wanted to get a front row seat, I guess.
If this story were a made-for-TV movie, and it surely will be, you might not believe it.
It is August 1st, 1990. Time is 10 a.m. Seabrook, New Hampshire. We're about to do a one-party consent via telephone.
Sat around brainstorming the pros and cons of slitting a man's throat rather than firing a 38 caliber projectile through his head.
Yes.
There's only one person in the state of New York who is sitting in prison tonight with a sentence of life with absolutely no possibility of parole.
Yes, I need a policeman. 4D Misty Morning Drive.
Okay, what's going on over there, ma'am?
There's somebody screaming for help outside.
Hello?
There we go. That's better, huh?
Hey, friends. It's been a while. Welcome back to the In-Between podcast. I'm your host, Mel Barrett. Several months ago, I had a conversation with someone very close to the Pam Smart case, Raymond Fowler's brother, Robert. When I was speaking to Rob, I felt like I was home again. He sounds like my cousin, my uncles, and every kid I grew up with. We had a long, involved chat about the trial, the boys who were, and some still are, his neighbors, and about his brother, Raymond. He still lives in the house they lived in when Greg Smart was murdered nearly 35 years ago. When I'm talking to Rob, he's sitting in the same chair he was in the night of the murder. Rob is an intuitive, kind, and incredibly smart individual. We probably could have spoken for days, but alas, there were kiddos to take care of, and the dog needed a pee, so I had to cut it short after several hours. In the time I spent with him on the phone, I noticed he, like me, sees the humanity of this terrible situation. He understands the psychology of the kids involved and Pam. He and his mother still discuss the case regularly, and I hear in his voice that he's still searching for answers. He also drops a lot of new insight and information in our conversation, so I think you'll find it enlightening and shocking. I don't want to give too much of it away, but I do want to share a portion of our conversation. I can't run the whole 3-hour call here because there's some personal stuff in there, but I want you to hear from someone who is closer than anyone could be to this case about how it affected their lives. I've edited myself out of most of the call because I think it's important to hear Rob instead of me blathering on, though there are places where I just can't help myself. The point of all this is that in-between area. I've come to realize that justice is anything but black and white, and at the end of the day, it's about people, no matter what side you're on. I think we have a tendency to get caught up in right and wrong and forget that everyone involved in a crime is a human being. The law can be interpreted and both sides argue their theories. Then, in some cases, 12 people decide the fate of the accused based on their perceptions of the argument. But at the end of the day, the final decision on how the trial happens, who can say what and when, where the trial takes place, who's allowed in the courtroom, what evidence can be admitted and what can't, comes down to one human being, the judge. Judges, too, are fallible and full of bias. They are human. Life is emotion. Law is emotion. Crime is emotion. Unraveling who is right and wrong is not easy. But with some humanity, we might get closer to understanding ourselves and others a little more. That's what I love about true crime. Here's one of those very humane people right now, Robert Fowler.
I just had a few questions for you. I know you spent the past 34 years talking about this, and I'm sure it gets old, but I really appreciate you talking to me about it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because me and my mother get on. I don't talk to her about every 3 months or so, but we always end up, not recently, but we end up on the subject. And we end up talking for 2 hours about it again. So it's not that it gets old. It's just that it's such a detailed case that we went through, you know, way back when.
Yeah.
And all the details are still kind of fresh. And I think we refresh each other's memory, my mother's and myself or whatever. Yeah. Go back over it again, you know, the problems and issues and everything that happened.
Yeah. I was 15 when this happened. You know, so we were all watching the case every day. I mean, I think I skipped school a couple times to stay home and watch the trial. And, you know, my whole family would be gathered in the living room, everybody watching it. And of course, everybody had their opinions and they were all based on what we were seeing in the media. So I went for a really long time sort of believing what my family was saying, which is that Pam was a slut who got her husband killed. Over the past 34 years, it's always been the National Enquirer or Dateline or ABC News or something like that. And they sort of give us this sanitized version of this story. They give us a Cliff Notes version of the story. And there's just so much more to it. I'm not assuming what side you're on. I'm mostly wanting to talk to you about your family's experiences and Raymond's experiences in particular.
So you can imagine me and my mother sitting here, knowing what we know about all the other stuff that happened that isn't in the trial, isn't in the transcripts, isn't on TV, wasn't reported on. Mm-hmm. That we knew about from the other side of it that never made it in the trial. So you don't have record of any of that.
Yeah.
Raymond's a little bit more iffy about it because he's kind of like doesn't want to rehash and have it brought back up in the public again with him. But I've always been vocal about it, you know, about the situation. And like his attorneys told him, this is way back when he got paroled and stuff, don't talk, don't say anything forever, basically. But they didn't have restraints on me. The state didn't have any control of me.
Right.
I wasn't part of it. I wasn't involved directly with it or anything like that. So I was able to say what Raymond basically told me. Obviously, I know it's hearsay and if it was a court issue. But Raymond's one of those kind of people that will tell you the truth before you realize he probably shouldn't have. That's how Raymond is.
That's what I'm getting because I've read through his police interview and some of the depositions. And that's what it seems to me. It seems to me like he was really trying to do the right thing, but he was also really worried about his friends. And then he was also really worried his friends were going to kill him. So he was in a really tough spot.
They were stopping down here. When Raymond moved into Maine with a cousin, right after that happened, I don't think the cops had picked up the boys yet. Raymond hadn't even made a testimony yet, right? But they knew about it. It's out of questioning people. So what happened was Raymond moved to Maine, and he told the cops where he was going to be, gave him a location, had a phone number and all that stuff, because he wasn't arrested yet. The case was still being put together when Raymond first turned himself in. The state didn't have a case at that point. They had information, but no case. They used Raymond's statement to arrest the three boys and, well, of course, Pam. That's what they used to get the indictments on the three boys and to get them to turn around on Pam and eventually turn around on him. The whole story is that J.R., Pete, and Bill used to come here almost every day. Raymond was in Maine. I knew where he was. And they'd always stop in to see Raymond. I knew what was going on at the time. I knew it, all this information. And they weren't quite sure if I knew or not, but they probably assumed I did. You know, J.R. and them?
Yep.
I was always friends with J.R., closer friends with him. And I knew Pete, but I didn't know Bill that well. So one day, J.R. came here and he was saying, well, we really need to talk to Raymond. I feel bad for Raymond because he's an adult and we're just kids. We'll get a slap on the wrist. Now, he didn't say anything specific about anything. He just made a comment, like, off the cuff, because he might have thought that I'd known what was going on. Mm-hmm. But they were also stealing stuff around the same time, so he might have thought that he can use that both ways, because I knew Raymond was stealing shit, going on, ripping off storage containers and things like that.
Right.
So he might have thought that he could use it both ways, like, you know, I feel bad for Raymond because he's an adult. And I said, it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah.
And his face turned white when I said that.
I bet.
You know, I was always really good close friends with him and his sister and his family and everything. I knew them really well. But I said to him, I said, you know, that's not always the case. It doesn't always happen that way. And his face turned white. And he said, well, we really need to tell Raymond. Can you give Raymond a message to tell him that we're going to find him, trying to talk to him? Well, they really want to talk to him and get his story straight. They also were really trying to find him because they were afraid that he was going to talk. That came from another cousin that had conversations with and Pete, and I don't know if Bill was there then.
That was Ralph.
About Raymond got to watch his back because he's next. That's what Ralph Welch said to me and Raymond. So Raymond moved up to Maine with a cousin just over the border. It wasn't that far away. But I even said to him, I said, you know, the thing is juveniles can get charged with adults depending on the situation, the crimes and the situation and circumstances. They all changes that juvenile thing. He didn't want to hear that.
No, I bet he didn't. No. Can you tell me, why do you think they wanted Raymond to be with them that night?
The real reason, the testimony that Bill and them gave was all bullshit on the stand. That wasn't even how it really went down. Because I talked to Ronnie, which was my cousin Ralph's father. I was just, you know, that's why I'm related to him, but to his father. So Raymond kind of knew what the boys were planning on doing. He didn't know what day they were doing shit. They were always changing things, you know, always kind of like making the things up on the fly. You know, let's go here or whatever. Raymond was helping Ronnie put in a windshield in a car that day. So they all came over to get Raymond. They kind of egged him on and said, come on, Raymond, you gotta go with us. But Raymond didn't want to go because he kind of had an idea what they were planning on doing.
Right.
And he didn't want to go. And he said, well, so he finished up with Ronnie. And then he said, well, just drop me off over at Hampton because we're going that way. Because he was kind of seeing some girl over that way, a friend of his that he wanted to see. So Raymond got in a car with them going over to get dropped off in Hampton. He thought they'd just drop him off. Well, they didn't. They drove to Derry. And at that point, Raymond was upset because he hadn't any food and he was hungry. So they drove to Derry and that's why in the testimony you'll hear when they say that Raymond complained about, you know, being hungry, so he asked Bill for money for pizza.
Right.
And that's when Jr. drove around to drop Raymond off. Well, Bill gave him money and Raymond went to Pizza Hut. Jr. drove the other two around the corner around where that music store is. I don't know which one it is.
Goodies.
Yeah, but that's when Jr. drove around the back of the place and they, you know, dropped the two off with the bags and stuff that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So Jr., you know, come around the back, parked the car, and went across the street to see Raymond because that's where he was. And so a little bit of time passed. I don't know exactly how long this all took place, like what the actual time frame is, because I was there. You know, this is what happened circumstantially.
Mm-hmm.
So Raymond was flirting with a waitress over there, and then I don't know how long it was there before they decided to go find their two boys, you know.
Yeah.
So Raymond and Jr. walked back over, got in the car, and that's when they rode around that side road that goes down by where the complex is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they go by there a couple times, I think, is what I understand. And Raymond was getting mad at this point because it's already dark, you know, it's getting later. He had pizza, but now he didn't want to be there, is what the whole point was.
Mm-hmm.
He had an idea what was going on. But at that point, I think he just didn't want anything to do with it because his goal on the first attempt was just to steal property. That's all he wanted. Now, we ain't got to the first attempt. That was in the trial, but there's a separate situation to that. So they finally get the three boys, or they finally found the two running across the field or wherever that is. I'm kind of not really, I don't know the actual area, so I'm just telling you what my recollection is of what was said.
I went out there a few weeks ago, and so I understand the logistics of where they were and where they were coming from. So yeah, I understand. Yeah. I was over there.
See, I don't know that detail, but I know in a picture in my head, I understand what they were talking about, how that went down. So they saw the two running across the field, like that little area between the side road.
Yeah.
And they got in the car and see this Raymond's story to us originally about that whole situation was that they were describing the dog saying, I think I killed the dog because I kicked him down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, I don't know which one did it, but the way Raymond described it to us was that, you know, he thinks that the way they were talking about killing Greg was that the story was different than what they told in the trial, as in it wasn't Bill that killed him, it was Pete.
Yeah, that's my opinion as well, but go on.
I mean, at this point, it doesn't really matter exactly who killed him because they both were there, you know, they both participated, but the story that what was on trial wasn't really, we don't think it's how it really happened. It was how, what the state wanted them to say.
Right.
It had to be Bill. It had to be whatever the state said. It had to be this way, that way. You know, the three boys were in Brentwood in the same jail cells area. Two were in the same cell and one was next door.
Yep.
Raymond was in a different part of the prison itself. They separated him. I mean, why would you do that, really?
I've always wondered that. So, I mean, that's sort of a running theme here. I mean, Raymond, the way I describe it in the podcast is Raymond is out on an island by himself. I can't quite figure out why, except for the fact that
his reasons why they did what they did with Raymond. But,
yeah, tell me.
Well, they want to include him enough to be guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't talk. So if he did talk, he's going with them. That's the whole reason they wanted him there. Guilt by association, and if you want someone guilty with you, you got to bring him with you. So, because Raymond never did anything that whole entire evening, Raymond never participated, never did anything to help them do this, or he happened to be in the car, and he got a pizza at Pizza Hut, and he only ended up in Derry that night because they didn't drop him off in Hampton.
Crazy.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's crazy.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111. And I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The other problem is what Raymond did do, I think he said Pete or somebody held the gun up and because the barrel's still warm or something like that. Raymond didn't believe him. This whole time when they got back in the car and they're driving out of there, Raymond thought they were bullshitting them. He didn't think that they actually did it because he knows them. You know, he knows how they are. And he said that one of them held the gun up. I don't remember which one it was. I think it might have been, it could have been Pitt, Bill. It could have been Pete. Held the gun up to Raymond like to, so he could feel the end of the barrel. So Raymond put his fingers out and touched into the barrel like a dumbass. I mean, why? Why would you do that, Raymond?
He had to know if it was hot or not.
Well, he didn't believe him. So they had to prove it to him, so he had to touch the gun, basically.
Jeez, yeah.
That's how Raymond is. He would have come across the jury as someone that's just too stupid to lie, basically.
He seems like a nice guy, too.
He just doesn't lie like most people would. Like, he just, I don't know, sometimes I wish he would, because it would keep him out of some trouble. But he's one of those people that if you ask him a question, he'll tell you the answer without hiding it or saying anything else. He's just straightforward, no bullshit. So if you get on the stand, he would tell it like it was, like what happened. And he didn't get on the stand because the state did not want Raymond to testify.
Yeah, that's one of my big questions.
Why? I almost read your mind while you're going to ask me questions. Because Raymond would have complicated the nice, clean, easy, half-court hoop shot. Basically, Raymond's story wouldn't have jived because he was not in the same cells to get the story down. Mm-hmm. So those other three had plenty of time to go over their stories, to get all their ducks in a row, all their bullshit together. Exactly how they're going to, you know, do their own testimonies and stuff like that. Because the state needed it to be cohesive.
And they were dealing with a bunch of teenagers. But
they also threatened the parents, their parents.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that's the interesting part.
So in the process of threatening their parents, they had control of those three kids. So that was a duress kind of situation to me as far as testimony. You know, if my mother was being threatened by the state, I'm going to try to do whatever I can to avoid that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Why? Whatever I have to do. It's what they did. Now, not necessarily everything that the boys said on the stand was not true. It just wasn't all true. It was a lot of bullshit in between. It was some things that were true, some things that weren't true. There was some things that, you know, if the evidence was presented in the trial, the jury would have had questions about. This is all about the jury.
For
now,
sure.
As far as, like, what side I'm on, I'm not on anybody's side. I don't root for Pam, like, oh, she should be out of jail right now. But I don't like the idea of how the case was handled and the sentence she got for what the circumstances were.
Yeah.
To me, it's more of a justice thing. I guess a little more clear cut with me. I would like to see her get a parole hearing at least.
Yeah.
She can tell her story. She can get, you know, her information there. They can judge the situation as it is. But she really got railroaded. Not to say she doesn't have responsibility in this, because she does.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the case had responsibility at some point, some form of it,
right.
Including some parents, because some parents actually get rid of evidence.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's the state. What the state deal was threatening the kids with. There's a lot of responsibility going around, and Pam's not oblivious to it.
So I talked to Maggiato. I had a lengthy conversation with him last week, and I asked him about Raymond, and I said, why didn't you call Raymond to testify? And he said, well, he wasn't a cooperating witness.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Why?
He wouldn't really tell me. The defense wanted to call him.
They wanted to call him.
And all of a sudden, he gets charged and thrown in jail, and now his lawyer is telling him he has to plead the fifth, which means the defense doesn't want to call him anymore. But I said to him, you've got every other person involved, and you're talking about Raymond throughout the whole trial.
Yeah,
and
he's in the whole trial, basically.
I was like, why isn't the jury questioning, where's Raymond? Why isn't Raymond testifying?
They should have.
Yeah, they should have.
The jury had a right to question it and ask the judge, why are we not hearing from this
exactly.
person? He's part of the trial. Why are we not hearing his story?
So my question is, I'm trying to figure out what Raymond was actually charged with in connection to this and how long he served it for the first time.
You know what it was? They threw up a bunch of speech. spaghetti to see if it would stick on the wall.
Right? Yeah, like burglary, accomplice, all that.
They got him for a speeding ticket for like 2 years before or something stupid. Like, you know, I'm just exaggerating. But, you know, they tried to throw as much at him that he had to do a plea bargain. But I was at the attorney's office when Raymond was on the phone, a conference call with us down there, because he was asking to be my mother. This is when, before he made the plea bargain, we were talking to the attorney. It was me and my mother. And then, so Raymond asked my mother, asked everybody around the circle what they thought he should do, like just some family input. My mother was just looking at the smallest sentence he could get, right? The minimum. And so they get to Rob. But guess what Rob says?
What does Rob say?
I would fight the motherfuckers.
Yeah.
My exact words. I would fight the motherfuckers because they don't want to try it before them. They don't want to push this case, your case, ahead of hers, and you couldn't request it.
Right.
Raymond had leverage before that.
What was his leverage?
The leverage was if he wanted a speedy trial, they're going to have a really hard time with Pam's case because all the information that would have came out for Pam's case would have been already out in Raymond's case as it was testified to.
Yeah.
They couldn't change it in the Pam's case. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It would have complicated her case all the way around. They did not want it. So the state was gambling on the fact that if they keep him quiet, don't put him in the trial, that they could have this slam dunk case that they put together. This is obviously just a different look at the case, you know, your family had at the time, because they didn't have the information back when we had here.
No.
We knew what was going on.
We had WMUR and that was it.
What your family didn't see, and my mother had been over this a million times, is the whole lead up to this whole situation started with the first attempt. Bill and Raymond talked about it, and, you know, Raymond was stealing stuff at the time. They were all stealing stuff, going out, ripping car radios out of cars. They were doing bad stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we knew Raymond was doing it too. At the time, Raymond ended up getting a ride from Danny Blake over to the school. My different cousin. I got too many cousins. You got to lose track of my cousins.
I have a lot of questions about Danny Blake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Danny Blake is a cousin to my mother's side, and he's pretty close cousin too. So Danny gave him a ride over to the school. So that's when Bill and Raymond took Pam's car to Derry, the first attempt. This was the whole situation that I don't know exactly what was said, but Bill and Pam talked about, because they didn't talk to Raymond at the time about that. So Raymond never had conversations with that first attempt with Pam directly at the time.
This is when they went to go get the concert tickets, and then they got dropped off at the school.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So what they did was they had an argument on the way up to the first attempt, because Bill was telling Raymond, well, we got to kill Greg. And Raymond's like, I'm not killing anybody. I'll rip shit. I'll take stuff. I'll go in and take stuff. We can make a great burglary, but I'm not going in there. I'm not killing anybody. You know, just the way he was. That wasn't his thing. You know, he lost his dad when we was really young. I was 13. He was 9, maybe.
Wow. I didn't know that.
You know,
sorry.
Bad lifestyle, stress, divorce was going on at the time. You know, all kinds of other, you know, I was a little older, so I was a little more aware of what was going on, but they had an argument on the way up to Derry, and the argument was that Bill was adamant about killing Greg, and Raymond says, I'm not killing anybody. So Bill was getting worried. This is in the trial. He's testified that he was worried that Raymond would actually do it, which is dumb, because the argument was the opposite. Raymond's story would have said, Bill kept saying, no, we can't, we got to kill him, we got to kill Greg, because we can't do this a second time. So what they did was they got there too late, because Raymond was driving. But Bill said he got him lost, but Raymond said he got him lost because he knew where Derry was. Because Raymond started realizing that Bill was just not giving up on the killing Greg thing.
And so he did it on purpose so that they would.
So on purpose, Raymond says, well, so he got there late, so Greg was already home. That's why that never happened. But on the trial, Bill says, I don't know how the jury didn't pick up on the story that he told, because it was like backwards.
Yeah.
He's talking about having an argument with Raymond about killing Greg, which he was the one that got Raymond involved in the first place to kill Greg.
Mm-hmm.
But Raymond refused to, so that was going to be a problem for Bill. So Bill didn't want him to get there and break in and not do it.
Right.
Because it would not happen. It couldn't happen a second time. He was smart enough to understand that. That's the whole purpose of the first attempt. That's what happened. Now, what Pam knew in the background was a different situation, because Raymond wasn't involved with the Pam and Bill talk before Raymond and Bill went to Derry.
Okay.
That's what I understand. But there was a conversation on the way back. I was sitting here, where I'm sitting right now, and I looked out the window, and this silver CRX pulls up right in front of the window where I'm sitting at, and I didn't know who it was. You know, I saw it drive in. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
I had no idea who it was. It was an unusual car. I didn't know who was driving. At first, I looked down. I saw this blonde, you know, except he's a hair.
Could
see a guy sitting at the front. I couldn't tell who it was. Then Raymond got out the back. But before he got out the back, Pam had the radio turned up a little bit, so the speaker's like right behind Raymond's head. And he said that he did hear Pam say to Bill, I don't care who kills him as long as he's dead.
Huh.
Raymond heard that, enough of that in the conversation. But as far as talking directly to Raymond, Raymond about doing it. Because at that point, Raymond thought that Bill wanted him dead.
And then when he was doing his police interview, you know, they asked him so many, they were really, really, really pushing him. You know, the Surette just kept saying to him, you know, I think you're telling us 90%, but you're leaving 10% out. They asked him several times, did Pam have anything to do with this? And he would say, I don't know. And then he would say, well, Bill liked her. Well, I don't know. And then sometimes.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
Raymond didn't know. I mean, Raymond knew from the conversation I just told you about by the time they got here, he overheard that part of it. But here's the thing, Mel.
Yeah.
You're human. You know what the humans, you know how people are. They say shit like that all the time. They don't actually mean things.
That's what I think. Honestly, I don't really try to give people my opinion too much on what I think about what really happened. But these are all kids. Everybody's
situations.
Yeah, they're under the age of 23, all of them. And I can see Pam is pissed off at Greg. They're having a shitty marriage. They got married young. They've only been married a year. And she says, well, the only way that we're going to be able to be together is if he's gone. And Bill goes full force with that. I mean, I've looked at all of the transcripts of the wiretaps, everything.
Mm-hmm.
The way they're talking back and forth, they're talking like kids. They're being callous. They're saying, they're being flippant. Like, things are just coming out of their mouths. And I don't know how anybody could take any of it seriously, but...
Raymond didn't take it. So what I'm trying to relate to you is, like, during the interview that the police did with Raymond is one of those people that he does not lie well. He says shit before he realizes he shouldn't have said shit. And he says it because that's what it is. He's probably the most, use this in a loving term, stupidly honest.
Yeah. Honest to a fault, yeah. I really wished he'd had an attorney with him because I don't think he did during that interrogation.
He didn't. But his whole idea, his point of view at that point wasn't that he was going to be in trouble. Is that he's given the cops information. He voluntarily went over there. He went over there, right?
Yeah.
Because Ralph Welch says that the cops are they started to talk to people. I think Celia Pierce and Ralph one other person. I think the cops got information just at that point, but they had nothing to go on. Just that little bit of hearsay is nothing. So what Raymond did when they threatened to get Raymond, they told Ralph that Raymond's next. Ralph told Raymond that, and that's when Raymond went over to the police station. I said to Raymond, I think it's time. We got to go. And because he was like nerve shaking here. He was here. We were talking to him and stuff at that point. Because now this is his friends, people that he grew up with. Now we're talking about killing him because he knows too much. Right. He's too much involved.
And they've already killed somebody, so.
And he already killed one person. So he knew that it's possible that they could come after us here, too, you know. So he was worried about all those things. And given the situation, Raymond told the cops everything he knew. So when they said, oh, that 10%, well, the 10% you ain't getting from him is what he doesn't know.
I mean, because by the end of the...
You can't get 10% out of somebody if that's all that you've given you everything.
Yeah, at the end of the... Toward the end of the interview, I mean, Raymond was... I felt so bad for him because he's like, "What do you want me to say that I killed him?" And they were like, no, we want you to tell us the truth. And he's like, I'm telling you the truth. And then they just kept pushing. They just kept pushing. And he kept saying, I don't know what you want me to tell you. I'm telling you everything I have. And it sounds to me like you want me to say I killed him.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111. And I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
See, interrogations, they have to get rough with people because some people just won't say anything. They just will clam up. But Raymond told him everything already. That's the problem. He gave him the information that he knew about, that he could say he knew for sure. And they wanted the information that he didn't know about, which was what he didn't know. And Raymond's not going to make it up, lie. Raymond was already brought up to not lie, right? He's at the onset of it is, Raymond was separated from the boys in the prison, which should have been a red flag to the jury.
But right? The jury didn't know that. The jury only knew that JR, Bill, and Pete were either, JR and Bill were in the same cell and Pete was in two cells down.
Yeah, they were in the same area, though, so close enough to be in the same area.
Yeah, that's all. They didn't know where Raymond was. That's the thing I don't understand. Raymond was brought up so much in the trial, and there were no questions about, well, was he in prison with the boys? Well, what are his charges? Well, what's happening to him? Why isn't he testifying?
Out of all the stories that me and my mother reiterate and talk about and just question, like, this doesn't make sense at all. And the onset in the media... None of the media asked, where's Raymond?
No, I know. It's crazy.
We knew that Pam's attorney wanted Raymond to testify.
Yeah.
It should have been a big, huge red flag to the trial, because Raymond was there. He was involved. He's a witness, but yet he's not anywhere in the trial. I remember the night specifically that they did this, because I was cooking tacos in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I was split level, so the front door goes up the stairs and straight into the kitchen. And so I'm up here cooking tacos, and the reason why I remember this night so well is because I was bullshit that somebody burst through my door, almost like opened and kicked it open and ran downstairs. And I turned and looked and I saw I heard the door go boom. And I looked over and I saw Bill, Pete, and J.R., all three, and Raymond was right behind them. They all ran downstairs to where Raymond's room was. And I was bitching at him. I said, what the fuck are they doing? Excuse my English.
No, it's okay.
I said, what the fuck are they doing coming in like that? I was pissed. And, what it was is they didn't want me to see what they had in the hand.
Which was?
They had these black pillowcases. It's in the trial. I think they talk about, pillowcases. So they took them. They ran downstairs. And at this point, I had no idea what was going on. None of us knew what was going on. Mm. But I was mad at Raymond. So he walked up the stairs. I think he was trying to distract me from going downstairs, because I was bullshit that he'd come in the house like that.
Was this the night of the murder?
This was the night off.
Wow. Okay.
They came here first because they had shit and they had stuff.
Yeah. I have a question about that. We'll get to it.
Some of it ended up downstairs. And we didn't know this at the time. We found this out. This is after the fact. But what happened after was like a day or two later, I think it was maybe a couple days after that. Now, Raymond had mentioned it to my middle brother first, and then he went to my mother, and then I ended up learning about the whole thing. It was all relatively soon right after that. Raymond was in shell shock, basically. He was shaking when he was telling us what's going on, and he was. And then my middle brother told me that Raymond has some friends that just killed somebody. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. It was kind of horrifying to hear that for the first time.
Yeah.
Because if his friends did it, I want to know who it was. And two, I wanted to know if he was involved. Mm-hmm. So we heard about it a few days later and stuff like that. So finally, my mother learned about it. We all talked about it. We're having trouble pulling information from Raymond because he didn't want to talk. He didn't want to say who it was. You know what I mean? It was one of those kids. It's his friends. It's not like it's easy to give up friends that you grew up with. He didn't know Bill that well. But Jared and Pete were his childhood, like, schoolmates or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's how the whole thing kind of originated in that whole time frame, because they came here. And then they went with that. Left from here, apparently they went down to South Main Street and dropped off Pete, which is where his mom was. Mm-hmm. And see, I think they threw the bags or the pillowcases in the marsh area that's close by to there. But when Raymond told the cops where they threw the stuff, because they probably dropped stuff out that way, Raymond told them, he said, no, they didn't. They threw it over here in the marsh. And when they went to go look for it, it was gone. So it means that somebody went back and got it. It's evidence, basically.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. I don't know if you know anything about this, but I know one of the black pillowcases ended up at Pete's house and his mom hid it for a while. But there were two other bags. There was a duffel bag and there was like a backpack. One of them had the clothes in it. And
they were throwing stuff out the window on the way back.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Throwing clothes out the window.
I can't believe that the police didn't. I mean, I know it was probably miles away from the condo, but there was a couple of things that the police just picked up and threw in the trash because they didn't think it was evidence, like one of the gloves. There was the black backpack with like red on it that was Pete's, and his mom had bought it for him and it had the clothes in it, and then they were throwing the clothes out the door. But I'm like, did they get rid of all of the clothes? Like, were there any clothes left? There were two other bags that the mom, and then Bill's mom literally destroyed evidence. She like burned stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So, is there blood spatter? Like, what, where is all the evidence and where did it go?
Well, you don't know that because it's gone.
Yeah, I know, it sucks.
And then the next thing that Raymond did wrong, which, I can understand why he did, is the next day he went to JR's up there and cleaned the gun. He said he cleaned up where I touched. I didn't want my fingerprints on that gun.
Yeah, he did it in, like, the trailer or something, right?
Well, it's right there. JR's family is right, like, walking distance from here.
Yeah.
You can walk up there. Yeah, so what happened is Raymond went over there, and he didn't clean the gun like, how you normally would clean the barrel and everything. The whole thing.
Yeah.
He said all he did was just wipe the end of it off because he didn't want his fingerprints on the gun, because he didn't do anything. He just touched the thing to see if it was warm.
Right.
My cousin Ralph is still in contact with JR, and probably Pete too. I don't know. They still know each other. They're friends, but I don't think they're good friends.
Yeah.
now since it happened, but I went and talked to J.R., right? Not about the case directly. We didn't say anything about the case, but I went away and wanted to tell him, you know, Raymond doesn't hold any hard feelings or anything like that. And, you know, we talked for a little while, you know, through the glass of Brentwood. And I knew it was being recorded. You know, they're going to record that shit.
Right.
You got a brother of the one of the ones at the other side, and I'm going to visit J.R. There's no reason why I couldn't see him. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. When you saw J.R. a couple of years ago, did you guys talk about it at all, or was it just sort of friendly?
We didn't talk about the actual case. We talked about not in specifics. You know, me and J.R. never really talked about specifics about the case. You know, yeah. It never was about, you know, Raymond or him or anything that happened that way. I think we just kind of kept it just me and J.R. as friends, you know. I didn't question him about details. And, you know, he talked about traveling and he talked about work and I asked him how he was doing and that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I appreciate your honesty. I appreciate, you know, you talking to me about it. I've obviously tried to get in touch with Pete and Bill. I don't have any contact info for JR. I don't think any of those guys will talk to me, mainly because they don't want to go back to jail and they're worried that anything that they say or do could get
them. They're still on parole. Yeah, they're still on parole.
Yeah, but I'm really appreciative that you are willing to talk to me.
The reason why I talk to people, you know, not that it draws attention to me, is the situation, the story itself is missing pieces that the public doesn't know.
Yep.
And that's the problem.
Yep.
Even way back then, me and my mother, we agreed on almost everything, but what was the problems in the case, you know, what we were seeing and what we were watching. And we even knew when the Pam was being taped that day, I got a phone call and someone told me that you know, Pam's being bugged today.
Yeah, she knew it. She knew it.
It's the information that we knew about. And I don't know how we ended up getting that close to everything and knowing all this information, because we knew information that the cops didn't even have.
I think a lot of people did, and I think that's one of the reasons why Pam wanted... You know, the thing is, her lawyers told her she was going to be wiretapped, and then Greg's best friend, Brian, you know, she told him, I'm going to talk to Cecilia and I'm going to try to trap her. And his girlfriend, Tracy, was there. There were two witnesses to it. So it's always interesting to me that everybody believed everything that was on the tapes and that the defense didn't push a little bit harder to say she knew what she was doing on these tapes.
And what she said is what actually got her in trouble. I don't care how she tried to say it. And even if she did say it with the intent to get information from Celia, it backfired on.
You're absolutely right. I mean, and the other, you know, the other tapes that they didn't allow in, she actually says on those tapes, I don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about? I didn't have anything to do with this. She says
that wasn't admitted.
Yeah, they didn't put them in a court, obviously. All right. Well, you take care. I will be in touch for sure. And I really appreciate you. Okay.
You're welcome. And yeah, we'll catch up whenever.
Okay. All right. I hope you have a great night. I'll talk to you soon.
You too.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
Okay. I know that was a lot. Thanks so much for listening. I did want to say one more thing. I haven't fully had an opportunity to thank my listeners yet. I know I post on socials and respond to comments, but I want to take a few minutes here to say thank you to you all. Your support and feedback has meant the world to me. I also want to address some confusion about the new TIBP feed on Apple, Spotify, etc. Many of you subscribed to the Grab Bag Patreon to hear the first season of TIBP back in October when the show came out. Well, because you tuned in, it gave the show life. One of my main goals in making this podcast is to get as many ears as possible on Pam's story, because the general public has never heard the full, in-depth account of what happened when Greg was murdered in 1990. And I think it's time the world heard it. I was really surprised and stoked to hear that Pam and her counsel, Matt Zernheld, will be filing an appeal for the first time in decades in the coming month or so, and that some of the points of the appeal resulted from the work I did on this show. The fact the story is catching on now is amazing. The timing couldn't be better. Because of your feedback, GrabBag Collab generously offered me a general feed just for the TIBP. Because of your feedback, GrabBag Collab generously offered me a general feed just for TIBP and have approved more seasons with more cases. So on December 24th, the first episode of TIBP aired to a worldwide audience with ads. If you see me promoting a quote-unquote new episode, it's for all the folks who haven't heard it yet. And for all the folks who want to binge the whole season, they can come to GrabBag Collab main Patreon and join you to listen. The general feed doesn't have access to these bonus episodes yet. You get them first. If you've listened on Patreon or the general feed, it would mean the world to me if you would rate, review, subscribe, and share with as many people as possible. Ratings help the algorithm get this story in front of more people. For independent podcasters like me who don't have an advertising budget, your support is invaluable. If you'd like to help Pam's legal defense as they file and head into this appeal, go to payit2, that's payit2.com, search Pamela Smart, and donate if you're able. Thanks so much for listening and getting involved. More to come, so stay tuned.
The In-Between is written, edited, and hosted by me, Mel Barrett.
I also do some of the audio editing, but I couldn't content edit this sucker without the amazing Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Amber Hunt, my editor. Amber keeps me on track and helps cut the bullshit. Thanks, Amber. Thanks as well to my research partner and cousin-in-law, Lacey Umble. I also couldn't get this done without the kick-ass team at Grabbag Collab, Amber Hunt, Amanda Rossman, and Daisy Egan. The In-Between wouldn't exist without the encouragement and support of my dear friend, fellow podcaster, and all-around rock star, Yellen Marie Marsh. I love you, Ellen. Thanks for all you do. And I want to send another shout out to Rebecca Lavoie over at Crime Writers On, who gave me my first feedback on the series and encouraged me to pitch it. Thanks, Rebecca. Finally, my love, my partner, Lindsay, your support and belief in me always keeps me moving forward, even when the way ahead is very dark. Thanks for doing this with me. Also, your reenactments are my favorite. If you want to dive deeper into the cases I cover, visit inbetweenpod.com for source material and updates. You can find all the episodes and bonus content of The In Between on the Grab Bag Collab main Patreon feed.